This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
Are your parents more addicted to their screens than you are?
My mom just uses her phone to gossip with her friends and play Candy Crush. Same with my pop and my nan.
Yeah, it's a fair question. There is a lot of attention on young people getting off their phones, but is it time for older generations to put away their tech? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, we are talking older people spending a lot of time on screens, even if they don't love admitting it.
I'm hearing a tone of superiority.
It's more that I'm not quite in the depths of addiction that most others are.
Yeah, great conversation coming up between Hack reporter Ali Angeloni and her dad very soon. Also, would love to know if you think your parents or grandparents might be spending a little too much time online. Also coming up, former Prime Minister Scott Morrison, his idea that's outraged some parts of the community. First, though.
Hack.
At the end of the day, guns are a tool and they're fit for a purpose, especially out here in rural Australia.
On Triple J.
Over the summer, there's been one story that dominated the news here in Australia, and that, of course, was the Bondi terror attack that saw 15 innocent people killed, sparked a whole discussion around gun laws in this country. Politicians were forced back to Canberra early. Before we were back on your radio, they were in Parliament House bringing in new gun laws. Now, some were saying it's about time, but not everyone. The Nationals, for example, called it an attack on the everyday Australian. But what do those who own guns think about all of this? How will they be impacted by these laws? Well, April McLennan has been finding out.
I'm a roo-shooter based on the Eyre Peninsula.
Most of 27-year-old Sam's nights are spent looking through a rifle scope.
We'll go out and target certain species of kangaroo.
I'm catching up with him in a shed on a property near Cleve in regional SA. And Sam says to do his job, he needs a few different guns.
Yep, this is a gun safe, Schedule 2. Designed to hopefully keep the wrong people out and keep them safe.
Yeah, and how many guns do you have in here?
I have 6 guns in here. It's pretty simple. It's just a bolt-action rifle. And I've got another one here that's very much the same, but that's got a thermal scope on top. Detects animals by heat, so there's no light involved when you're hunting at night.
Did Australia need tougher laws for licensed gun owners? It's a question we've been hearing heaps lately in the wake of the emergency recalling of Parliament last week and the Bondi terror attack in December that targeted the Jewish community, leaving 15 people dead.
They had hate in their hearts, but they also had guns in their arms.
So what's changed? Well, last week, the new gun reforms were hurried through Parliament. Under the changes, there'll be a national gun buyback and tougher license rules, like restrictions on importing firearms. On top of that, there's tougher background checks for anyone trying to get a gun license. And there's also new rules about foreigners and guns.
It will mean that non-citizens won't be able to own guns, and it will mean that intelligence agencies and knowledge is considered when gun licenses are issued.
In the end, the opposition, which this time last week meant the Liberals and the Nationals, voted against it.
All you are doing is diverting attention and taking away the rights of lawful Australians, whether they be on farms or whether they be in metropolitan areas that have done the right thing by this country, that have abided by the law and should not have their rights taken away.
Another hurdle the government has to overcome now is the national gun buyback, which was meant to be funded 50-50 with the states and territories. But Queensland, the NT and Tassie, which are all led by Conservative governments, reckon they won't contribute. Back to Sam here in Country SA.
There's definitely a need for gun control in this country and licensing. I think it's maybe a tad rush what they've come to.
While Sam reckons gun law reform isn't a bad idea, he's worried about tightening up imports.
Especially for contract shooters such as myself, we go through a lot of ammunition. A lot of us reload our own ammunition and we need those components and they all are outsourced internationally. It's going to affect availability and price, which for someone like myself, where we shoot to make a living, you know, every cent counts.
They've got 15 seconds to do what they need to do, like load, and they can line up, they just can't fire.
In another part of the country, at the Sporting Shooters Association of Australia's gun range in Canberra, everyone's getting ready for a metallic silhouette shooting competition.
I've been shooting also since I was 12, so about 5 years now.
17-year-old Grace is one of the competitors. She reckons the new gun laws could demonise legal gun users like herself.
We're just doing this for fun. It's our sport. Please don't think of it as taboo.
It's something her 15-year-old sister Sarah is worried about too.
I just think we need to focus on, like, who's doing the wrong when bad things happen, why they did it, and how we could have stopped it. That doesn't affect anybody else.
Their dad Mick also isn't stoked by what he's saying was a knee-jerk reaction by the government.
What happened up there at Bondi was tragic, but it was never the gun's fault. There was so many breakdowns along the way, but straight away government targets gun owners. We become the scapegoat for something that should never be and should never happen.
As for Sam, he reckons it's important to point out for people living outside the cap cities, guns can be essential.
Whether that be farming or doing something like I do myself, at the end of the day, a shovel doesn't dig a hole by itself. It takes a person to pick it up and do that task.
He reckons there should be more focus on criminals that have got unregistered firearms.
It's not fair to make everyday Australians and people that have never done a thing wrong pay for the actions of two extremists.
Hack on Triple J.
April McLennan reporting there, and I'm keen to hear what you think about all this too. Like, do you think that these new gun laws in Australia do go far enough? Or maybe you are a gun owner, like some of those people we've just been hearing from, and you think they go too far. Why? Message in 0439 757 555. Let's get into a chat now with Stephen Bendall, who is a gun safety advocate. He's with the Alana and Madeline Foundation. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Hi there, Dave.
Do we know how many guns there are in this country right now?
Yeah, well, right now there's over 4 million registered firearms. There's about a million licensed firearm owners. And there's probably between 400,000 illegal firearms. But, of course, the fact that they're illegal means that we don't know exactly, we can't count them. So there is a significant number of firearms in the community.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot, and people might be surprised hearing that number. Then again, they may not be. They may have thought that there were that amount of guns in Australia. I wonder, is that number, has it been rising over the years?
Well, our population has risen, of course, so we would expect it to increase. But one of the things that I think's happened after Bondi is there's been a lot of talks around the water cooler. There's been lots of discussions in the pub about firearms in the community. And Australians are rightfully proud of our strong gun laws, but they just haven't kept up with the changes in technology, the changes in ownership patterns, and the commercial interest of an industry that is marketing and pushing firearms.
We've got a lot of messages coming through on these new gun laws. Stephen, someone says, Ed says, I'm a primary producer with 12 firearms. Some of them are family heirlooms and they're not safe to be fired. They're purely sentimental, but I'm going to have to hand some of those in to be crushed. Another person, though, says, it wasn't the gun's fault what happened. That sounds like every American after a mass shooting. I worry that we're becoming exactly like America and arguing that we should have guns. I wonder, Stephen, you know, we've been hearing some of the concerns that gun owners have around these laws. Can you understand some of those concerns?
I absolutely understand, because it's been something that, you know, Australians have used firearms for a long, long time. However, there's a couple of things, if I could just point out. In your package earlier, I'm not sure who it was, one of the Nationals, I think, was talking about the rights to have firearms. Nowhere in Australian law does anyone have a right for a firearm. Firearm use and possession in Australia is a privilege that by law is conditional on public safety. None of the reforms that have been introduced in Canberra or New South Wales or Western Australia or being considered by any other state or territory, none of them prevent any of your listeners from using a firearm. They might have to have a tougher firearm application process. They might not be able to have access to the types of firearms that we saw so gruesomely used in Bondi. And they may not be able to have 183 of them in the shed. And they are just things that the general Australian public expect to happen. I think people are surprised when, you know, I talk about those, just those three things. And it's only reasonable that people are able to use firearms under a social license with the rest of, you know, the community. And the community has said, hey, we don't think those things are reasonable. And we expect governments to reduce harm in the community. We expect governments to make road laws and, you know, increase the price of tobacco. All these things that reduce harm in the community, and that's what's happening now.
You're listening to Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Stephen Bendall, who is a gun safety advocate. We're talking about some of these new gun laws that have been introduced that have passed the parliament recently. We're hearing from so many of you on the text line. Someone says, I grew up in a rural area. I owned a number of rifles. Once I moved to the city, I formed the strong view that there is no need for rifles in the city. Another person says, I don't expect these reforms to be popular, but someone has to take action. Another person says, we'll blame dingoes and sharks, then hunt them down when they harm someone. But when a human does it, we blame the instruments. And then somebody else says, that website where you can check how many guns are in your suburb is really eye-opening, and I found it really quite scary. Stephen, I wonder, do you think these changes are going to make a big difference? And do you think that these tightened laws may have prevented something like what we saw at Bondi?
Well, two questions. We'll never know about Bondi if that person, those perpetrators had stronger background checks, if that person was unable to have those sorts of firearms that cause such harm, and if that person wasn't able to have so many firearms. So we'll never know, but a reasonable person listening to your show or considering these matters would think that we should put those sort of restrictions in place. We can't just continue and say, hey, I'm a legal firearm owner, I'm okay, let me do whatever I want. That just doesn't work in our community. We need to put harm reduction strategies in place. And we have said for many, many years that legal firearm owners, by and large, are lawful, good people. But nevertheless, we still need to put some guardrails around the use of firearms in our community.
All right. Stephen Bendall from the Alana and Madeline Foundation, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Dave.
And we've got a lot of messages coming through. Someone says, I'm a licensed gun owner and an active sports shooter. I also do pest control on farms. If I'm trustworthy enough to have one firearm, what difference does it make if I have one or 10? That person says. Another person says, I'm a registered gun owner and a farmer. I don't care whether you live in a city or in the country. Registered gun owners should be allowed to have guns. They're not enough checks done on gun owners, though, nor enough funding to make sure the right people have a license. And then someone else says, the key point is the guns are registered. We need approval to purchase them in the first place. Tighter gun laws won't stop criminals from getting their hands on what they need to commit their crime. A lot of thoughts there from both sides, as we've been hearing. We're going to move on, though.
Hack. Given the specific involvement of radicalised extremist Islam, Australia's response must pay specific attention to this issue.
Triple J.
Yeah, it's not just gun laws that have been up for debate in the wake of the Bondi terrorist attack. There's also been a lot of discussion around religion, around freedom of expression. And someone who's been throwing his opinions out there this week is former Prime Minister Scott Morrison. Now, he's making headlines arguing Islamic institutions need to be better regulated. But while some of his former colleagues might support the idea, other people are saying it's really divisive. Evelyn Manfield explains.
Look, I think the Australian Muslim community has to take some responsibility for the behaviours we've seen exhibited over the last couple of decades.
Australia just got new hate speech laws, but the blame game that's been going since the Bondi attack is rolling on.
It's an exercise in collective blame, which in turn distracts from a focus on the horrific crime which occurred and understanding why it occurred.
Today, Liberal Senator Andrew Bragg weighed in.
Unfortunately, it has been a pattern of behaviour that some of these smaller incidents, and now we've had a significant terrorist incident, have emerged from these communities.
Okay, so where did this come from? Pretty much last night, former Prime Minister Scott Morrison gave a speech during a trip to Israel.
It is a solemn honour and privilege to be here with Jenny.
Over 20 minutes, he spoke about the fear being felt by Australian Jews and also praised Israeli PM Benjamin Netanyahu.
My friend Benjamin Netanyahu, can I thank him for his strength?
And then there was his new idea.
It is time that the Islamic institutions in Australia adopted nationally consistent, self-regulated standards, including a recognised accreditation work for imams, a national register for public-facing roles, clear training and conduct requirements, and disciplinary authority for their governing councils.
And he also has another suggestion.
Teaching should be transparent with English translations available.
Well, I think it's a worthwhile discussion to have because we have to make sure that we are not in a situation where religious teachings are inciting violence.
While some Liberal MPs are into the idea, it's being rejected by the government and Muslim leaders. Bilal Rauf is from the Australian National Imams Council.
It delivers to the very terrorists who commit these crimes the very objective which they seek, which is to divide and to pit communities and people against each other.
He says it only adds to division and fear rather than unity and points out many imams already do have qualifications.
That shouldn't be confused with, for instance, people who might get up and create a social media profile, give themselves a certain audience and then conduct some form of class or gathering.
The government's been fast to dismiss Scott Morrison's idea too, and the Treasurer Jim Chalmers is pointing out the Liberals just voted to support Labor's new hate speech laws.
I think typically Scott Morrison has a very different objective. He's a pretty divisive figure.
Just on those laws, they were tricky for the opposition itself. The Liberals voted for them, but the Nationals split. And with the two parties now officially out of their coalition, both leaders are under pressure.
I will be moving a spill motion on Monday afternoon in the National Party party room to give my colleagues an option.
Today, Queensland MP Colin Boyce said he wanted a vote on the Nationals' leadership next Monday.
Because the reality is, if they follow the course they're on now, we are going over the political cliff.
Over on the Liberals' side too, Susan Lee could also be in trouble.
The National Party, the Liberal Party, far right of Australian politics is really descending into farce. It's a kind of a bin fire of far right personality politics.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Evelyn Manfield reporting there from Parliament House, and don't worry, we're going to have a lot more politics for you heading into next week. Parliament back again next week, so there'll be heaps of politicians out there speaking, and we'll be speaking with some of them.
Hack!
They have been like, you should get off your phone, you should do this, you should do that, lower your screen time, whatever.
On Triple J.
All right, a question. How much time do you reckon you spend on your phone every day? Now, how much time do you reckon your parents spend on their phone every day? Or their tablet? Could be any device, really. Young people do get a bad rap for being on tech too much. But who would you say is more hooked? Do you think it's you, or do you think it's your parents, your grandparents? Because Hack's Alice Angeloni took a little social experiment with her family over the holidays, a bit of a tech cleanse. And here's how it went.
I think I am addicted to my phone.
My brain is rotten.
I'm brushing my teeth while scrolling.
My daily average is 12 hours.
Okay, so we all use our phones a bit too much, but is it young people that really have the biggest problem?
An epidemic that does not get talked about enough is the boomer scroller.
Let me introduce you to my parents.
Only just learnt about it, this doom scrolling.
This is my dad. He's a boomer, and in his world, Facebook Marketplace doesn't count as social media.
It's not social media.
It is social media.
for me, social media is when you're out there socialising with people. Most of the time, I'm just out there looking at things that I might potentially want to buy.
And Dad seems to think he's less hooked on his phone than everyone else.
I'm hearing a tone of superiority.
Well, no, it's more that I'm not quite in the depths of addiction that most others are.
So, is screen addiction generational?
I'm in a constant limbo of trying to get my screen time lower.
It gets really high to a certain point. I'm like, this needs to stop.
I don't use it as much as a lot of people my age.
In my free time, after work, before work.
I like limit the apps, everything, delete TikTok, delete everything.
It goes down for a little bit and then it just slowly creeps its way back up and then the cycle just kind of repeats.
Okay, so we're aware that our relationship with screens can be problematic. So have you copped hate about it?
My mom's always like, it's that phone. Like every single time I do something wrong, she's like, it's that phone.
But I did have a woman come up to me and my friends once when she was like, I just have to tell you, like, it's so refreshing to see a group of young people just actually speaking to each other and not being on their phones.
Back to my family. So over the summer, my brother Tim set everyone a challenge.
I thought it was a cool little sort of a social experiment to do as a family.
A 24-hour phone cleanse. The family together with no devices.
It was funny just to see the anxiety arise in all of us
as we came to terms with the fact that we wouldn't have our little friend, our little device.
Mark's there, let's say, and there's a bushfire and they need all hands on deck.
So you're going to lose your Wordle streak.
And of course, I'm not the only one who thinks their parents might have a bigger issue here.
My mom just uses her phone to gossip with her friends and play Candy Crush. Same with my pop and my nan.
I think the older generation is a bit more addicted than they want to admit.
Yeah, just what? In a different way.
Obviously, teens under 16 don't have as much choice about disconnecting now.
I'm 15 and I do not have Instagram, I don't have TikTok, I only have Snapchat. So, like, my relationship with, like, my screen time and stuff, it's gotten a lot smaller than it used to be.
Blaze is 16, but reckons his screen time has been down since the ban too.
I used to be on my phone 24/7, scrolling my friends' posts, talking to everyone, but now I can only talk to people that are my age or higher.
So, how did the phone cleanse go?
Not the question. Answer. We feel like we've had a much more grounded time here than we could possibly have had if each of us was tuned into our phones.
It was just a sense of calm and presence.
I would love to think that Dad and I might do this once a week now.
We did also notice a gap left by the good tech, the apps that we use for music and meditation, or being able to text Mum to say we're safe and heading home after a surf. This has all got my brother Tim thinking.
Us sort of younger generations, and even more so the Gen Alphas in school today, and we've sort of grown up with so much education relating to technology use and its potential negative implications for our mental health.
He reckons maybe there's a chat older and younger people can have together.
I wonder whether maybe the older generations didn't necessarily have that same level of education, or maybe they felt sort of exempt from the context. Maybe they haven't been quite so aware of how much they're using their phone, and maybe they're actually a little bit more hooked than they realise.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Alice Angeloni reporting there, a very personal journey for Ali, who loved the singing from her dad, John. Mr. Angeloni appreciated it. We're getting a lot of messages on this one. Someone says, can we please impose a boomer phone ban? They're the ones who are trolling online, plus they're handing half of our inheritance to scammers. Paige in Wollongong, I'm sure a lot of people would agree with you. Look, let's get some of the stats or an idea of whether this is a bigger problem we need to be talking about with Dr. Mick Moschel, a clinical neuropsychologist who looks at the way screen time affects our brains. G'day, Mick. Thank you so much for joining us.
A pleasure.
Can you settle this debate here? Do we actually know which generation is the most hooked on screens?
So the latest statistics we have would show that each age demographic, the relationship to the screens is slightly different. So for the younger generations, most of their screen time is spent on smartphones, using things like social media. So the last statistic I saw was that 50% of children are spending 2 or more hours a day on TikTok alone. And things like streaming, television viewing, that's more for the older generation. So they're spending more time on those platforms. In terms of the total amount of time, it does seem to be that 15 to around 24, they're spending the most amount of time on the screens. Again, it varies depending on the platform that's being used, but as a whole, it's around 7 to 9 hours of recreational screen media.
So
So younger generations still making up a lot of the people who are spending the most time on their screens, but we are seeing a rise in older generations maybe becoming addicted to their screens. Is that fair to say?
When it comes to the term addicted, it gets a little more complicated because addiction classically is referred to a set of behaviours that are usually classified by symptoms like increased craving and compulsion and loss of control and consequences. But in terms of overall screen time, the numbers do suggest that, especially comparing time spent before COVID and after COVID, that really started off this trend where it became a lot more normalized to spend a lot more time in front of screens and entertaining ourselves with screens. So across all age groups, we're seeing this rise in screen time.
We've seen young people in some instances starting to turn away from phones, moving to dumb phones, like heaps of devices on the market now for how to block your phone at home so you won't touch it. A lot of those things are aimed at young people. Do you think there should be more messaging aimed at older generations?
Almost certainly. The bait and switch that I think occurs with even a name like social media is convincing you as a user that there is something social about it. And I think in English, we don't really have a term to differentiate between elements of socializing that happened online. I mean, we've started to use terms like parasociality and socializing that happens offline. We've started to use terms like IRL in real life. But the real important difference between the two is that social media promotes connectivity. So you can connect to different people, but it definitely doesn't promote connectedness. So the feeling of hanging out with a friend after a couple hours, that feeling is viscerally and tangibly and importantly extremely different in terms of what it's doing to the brain and even the nervous system. So I think for younger children, they might already starting to be recognizing this, that they understand, they intuit that there's a difference between what's happening, the way that they're relating to their friends online and the way they feel when they hang out with friends in real life. And I think it's definitely something that older people might be facing as well, especially we have this sort of loneliness epidemic which is taking place. It might feel like there's some socializing that's happening online, but how much are they actually getting and how much important socializing that they're not getting when they're interacting online?
So, Mick, do you have any tips maybe for people who could be looking at their parents or their grandparents and thinking, oh, it doesn't seem too healthy, maybe they do need to cut down on some of the time they're spending on some of these devices? How do you have a conversation like that with people who are older than you?
It's funny because normally the conversation goes the other way, where parents will ask, how can we do anything to help our kids use these technologies in moderation? And usually it's good to model, it's good to mentor. When it comes to offering advice, even to parents, in some sense, because the younger generations are really the first generation of digital natives, there's a set of skills that have always been in the hands of the older people to teach the younger people. So when it comes to learning how to drive, this is something that older people have experience in and can transfer that experience to the younger people and feel confident that they know how to teach them to drive. I think this is one of the skills that actually younger people are a lot more comfortable in the digital environment than older people. I think there is some place for younger people if they feel like they are in control of their technology use, or they just understand the digital environment a little better, for them to have a very frank conversation with their parents, with their grandparents, and say, look, there's a lot of these features that are inbuilt into these technologies that wrestle this control we have away from us.
Good advice. Think about how you were taught to drive and what you hated about driving lessons and implement that in when you're giving advice about screens. Don't be a backseat scroller, you could say. Well, thank you very much for your time, Dr. Mick Michelle, clinical neuropsychologist. Appreciate you coming on Hack.
A pleasure.
And so many messages coming through on this. Someone says, everything we do now is over the phone, banking, groceries, work. We might hold our phones longer, but there is a reason for it. Yeah, a lot of people saying that you can't get away from screen time, even if you want to. We've got Caitlin with us on the line now. Caitlin, do you find this with your parents that, you know, one of them is using the screens a bit more than you?
Yeah. So my dad, he's like almost 70 and he spends all of his time basically either on the computer or watching TV. Yet as a kid, he used to tell me off all the time for using the computer or iPad or whatever too much.
And do you remind him that he used to tell you off, Caitlin? Are you like...
Yeah, a little bit.
Every now and then.
Doesn't pay much attention.
No, I bet. Every now and then it's good to just say, hey, remember that advice that you were giving me all those years ago? Hey, Caitlin, thanks for calling up. We've also got other people. Someone says, I use my phone and computer about 25% as much as my in-laws and parents. Nathan in Sydney, I'll watch a movie with my dad and stepmom, and then both of them are sitting there on their devices all the time. Someone else, I'm really hooked on Marketplace. Okay, so we've got a lot of people here who are either addicted themselves or they feel like their parents are. That is all for Hack for now.
Hack.